your world.
As the greatest of all possible tortures, and the greatest and most ingeniously and brilliantly designed prisons. Because after all, we are meant to have yoga or connection with Krishna. But we have rejected our relationship with Krishna and we wish to be independent. But in reality, we cannot be independent. And in reality, Krishna is the Lord. So because we reject Krishna's position as the Lord, and because we want to be the Lord, but it is unreal, it is an unreal attempt that we can be the Lord. Therefore, each person in the material world becomes Lord, but only of an illusory reality. But illusory reality is a contradictory term. Each person becomes the Lord within his own illusion. And in this illusion, his kshetra, in his field of activities, he is the most important. And it is him, it is he, that everyone should be pleasing. But it is only illusion. It is simply illusion that he's thinking he's the most important person. Why everyone does not love me? I am so wonderful. If people only understood who I am and what my true position is. And in this way, we're sort of living in a bubble. And why it's such a wonderful illusion or a wonderful trap, brilliantly constructed, is that everyone in their own bubble, practically speaking, has no relationship with anyone else who, because the other people have their own illusion. It is like so many different dramas or movies or plays going on simultaneously. And in my play or my drama, I am the lead character, most important lead character. And you just have a very small part in my drama. So I am thinking of you in relationship to my drama, but in your drama, I have a very small part. So these two conflicting illusions often do conflict. And practically speaking, since everyone is living in their own illusion, there is no communication between people. Practically speaking, it's so hard to communicate anything like a feeling or what you really believe, because everyone is in their own little bubble, illusory bubble of what reality is. Because we've rejected Krishna. In our illusion, we are thinking that what I want, what I believe, what I value, those things that are meant for my pleasure, give me pleasure, that these are very important. But no one else gives any value generally to our pleasure at all. So therefore, this is the construction of illusion. So, the interesting part of this torturous material world in which everyone either feels very much alone all the time or feels very much alone part of the time or is in the illusion that they're not alone and actually they are alone. They're in the illusion, they're atma sanyas asatsvapi. There's that famous story of Valmiki, how he became Valmiki Muni. He was a robber, and he was robbing and plundering and acting as a thief to get money for his family. So by the mercy of Providence, he came in touch with Narada Muni, and Narada Muni says, "You're so foolish. You're robbing and so many innocent travelers to get money for your family, but your family isn't going to get the karma for your activities. You're going to get the karma. You're going to suffer for it. And he said, no, my family loves me. They'd do anything. And then Narada said, oh yeah, watch this. Boing. Somehow or another, he made him as if he was dead or almost dead, and the family members were there, and they were asked, would you please, how were they asked? Does anyone know the story? Sorry.
The word that Narada says to allow me to go back to his family members and ask them to let them partake of his sins. So they said, no, we only partake of what you bring us.
We don't want the sins. We don't want the karma. Atma sannyas, the fallible soldiers who we so much depend upon. So it is a cynical view of the material world, actually, Krishna consciousness. We know it is doomed. And we know that everyone is living in an illusion. And it's very frustrating living in this illusion. And all of us should become convinced that there is no pleasure here. And there is no hope, or hope for happiness in the material world. Yet, communication must go on. And although it's so difficult from one bubble to communicate to another bubble, we try all the time. And for devotees, and for counselors, and for teachers, the communication is a necessity. Because in order to help another person, one has to know what is going on within his illusion. Even though it may be an illusion, we have to understand what is going on. Otherwise, if you don't know what the disease is, how is it possible to help and cure that disease and prescribe properly? So that knowledge must be there. So what we're going to speak of right now, we're going to continue speaking about how to listen on the level in which we can respond with understanding. Now this technique is a technique, and without Krishna consciousness, it is too much a hollow technique. But it can be very useful, and it's very simple if one learns the art. Now, it is said in the Bhagavad Gita, actually, that one who is self-satisfied, one who is in the mode of goodness, and one in the mode of ignorance, he will not act. The one in the mode of goodness will not act because happiness comes from the mode of goodness. And one who is happy and satisfied, he doesn't need to do anything because he's satisfied. One in the mode of ignorance is also satisfied, but he is in delusion, complete delusion. But no one is completely in the mode of goodness in the material world. The modes are always struggling with one another for supremacy. So it so happens that those who are... that everyone has feelings and desires in this world due to the mixtures of the modes of material nature. And depending upon our mixture of the modes, we will desire one thing or another, we will be experiencing or feel one thing or another. And therefore, we will naturally wish to communicate. Now, if someone has no unmet needs, if he is completely self-satisfied, actually, Jad Bharat is an example of someone, of course, not in the mode of goodness, in the transcendental platform, but completely self-satisfied, and he had no need to deal with anyone in the material world. And in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the Sthita Pragya, the one who is fixed in knowledge, is described in such a way that practically he is inert in relationship to the material world because all his desires and feelings are on the spiritual platform. But everyone else, most of the time, has need to communicate. sometimes, here's our little bubble here, it is empty, and we feel satisfied, we don't need anything, we have no feelings, and if you don't, I mean, no feelings other than peacefulness and happiness, and therefore, we don't need to communicate with anyone. But as soon as we have any feelings, communication is naturally a result of that. Of course, on Krishna consciousness, there are transcendental feelings that the devotee wishes to communicate. But we're not really speaking about that at this point. But if we want something, if we have some desire based on some feeling or lack, naturally it comes to the point of communication. Now, if we don't have a desire and we're satisfied, there's no need. But here's a slight desire. Say, if the lesson is going on a little bit long or it's a difficult lesson, there is in awakening within everyone comes some boredom. And what do we do? How do we communicate that? First, we won't say anything, but first we'll start moving around, and through our verbal or non-verbal and bodily languages, we can see that people are starting to get bored. We start fidgeting, we start looking at the watch, etc., like that. And in this way, we are exhibiting the feeling of boredom that is within us. We have a feeling, and we're subtly or grossly, we're at that point it's subtle, we're subtly communicating that feeling because we're in a disequilibrium in our satisfaction. Now, when the feeling of boredom becomes very great, maybe someone who is feeling that when he's on this level over here, or say, make another example, he's feeling hungry. Over here, he just starts fidgeting and he starts looking at his watch. And over here, we can see how much greater the hunger is over here, a great big feeling of hunger. Say if it's the class at the 1 o'clock, the 2 o'clock class. So someone is feeling great hunger. So he just naturally, he wants to express that feeling to someone. So, what he will do is he will, he can't express the feeling exactly because the feeling is eternal. I can't give you the feeling. I can't communicate the feeling to you. But I can express words that represent the feeling. Does everyone follow that point? I can't communicate the feeling to you, although you may be feeling hungry also, or you may be feeling bored also. But I can't communicate to you the hunger or boredom that I'm feeling, because that's a feeling that's trapped within me, in my field of activities. But I can communicate in words that represent the feeling, what I am feeling. So that is called, I'm going to put that into a code or some word symbols of the feeling that I have. Right? So I'm going to put that into some type of a code. Now I may say in my verbal code, I may turn to the person next to me and say, I'm really hungry. Now these words, I'm hungry or I'm really hungry, they represent the feeling that I'm having of hunger. Now, this particular, if I said to you, I'm hungry, now would you have trouble breaking my code, so to speak, and understanding the feeling that I have? No, it's very simple. You know what's going on in my stomach. My stomach is rumbling and I'm in some anxiety and etc. And you know, we have that experience of hunger. But this, I'm decoding a simple sentence like that, I'm hungry, is very simple.
But usually, most of the communication that we have that comes between two people are not that simple. It's not that simple.
For instance, if I'm feeling hungry, you're not going to raise your hand and say, if you're feeling hungry in the class, you're not going to raise your hand and say, I'm hungry, to the teacher. More often, the code, you'll encode that feeling of hunger into something that's more covered and harder to understand, such as, what time is it? Isn't that what happens? Or another type of another thing we say is, how much longer till prasadam? Or when is prasad? What time is prasadam served around here? Or what are they having for prasadam today? So these, or anything, so many things. Boy, I'm really feeling tired. So these are encodings of the same feeling of hunger. But very, very rarely, unless someone knows us or a simple one like this, someone may get it, but it's rare that someone will actually be able to decode our message to understand our feeling, he's hungry. Because if I say, what time is it? They'll say, oh, it's 2:10. But if he's a sensitive person and he knows us, he'll say, he may say something like, only 10 minutes to prasadam, don't worry. And actually that person has decoded properly what was actually in my words, which was expressing the feeling of hunger that I have. And when this second person feeds back the information correctly, oh, you're hungry, or only 10 minutes to prasadam, even though I did say that by saying what time, but I said it in a code that was difficult to understand. But when he feeds back the right answer, oh, you're feeling hungry, or only 10 more minutes to prasadam, then actually it's a full cycle of communication. Because I've said something, he has understood it properly, and then he has let me know that he has understood it, or what his understanding is, and I have said yes. So therefore, the understanding has taken place, and both people know that the understanding has taken place. A common incident that may occur would be, I'm hungry, and I say, what time it is, and this person, the second person says, oh, you have to go out somewhere? Now, has he got the right message from me? But just the attempt to feed back what he thinks, what will probably be the reaction? Oh, you have to go out somewhere? What will he will say, usually? No, I'm hungry. So therefore, the communication with a little bit of response and feeding back what you think, the communication will get completed anyway. So there won't ultimately be a mistake. Any communication or attempt to act in this way will be very helpful. Now, when we spoke about yesterday the four methods of listening, let's see if we can remember them. What's the first one? Raise your hands and then... Passive. And what does passive listening mean?
Not responding, just listening.
Just listening. And physically letting the person know that you're listening. And the second one?
Positive response.
Yeah, positive response to let the person know that you're awake. Yes. Okay. Etc.
And the third one?
Nevaki? Praising? Praising? No. That was one of the ones that we don't do. Yeah.
You ask more questions.
Yeah. So you ask questions, ask for more information, and what does that do? It lets the person know that you're interested. And this fourth one is responding. So the person knows that you're listening, the person knows that you're awake, the person knows that you're interested and want more information. And now this one is responding with understanding. And therefore the person not only knows those three, but he'll also know that you have actually understood him. Okay. From one book that I have here, we will read just a few examples of this, of emotions and hearing the emotion. Now, these are all school type of examples. So, but you can see how typical they are and how hard it is to actually read the actual emotion that's in someone's mind. So the student possibly is he's anxious about an exam that's coming up. So if I told you that we were having, we decided to have an exam on this, on listening and problem ownership, and everyone would immediately get an anxiety. And a type of a question like this may come up. Why do we have to understand all this theory about listening? But the real thing that may be in my mind, that's the feeling that's being encoded into that sentence, is that I'm in anxiety about the exam. Or sometimes when we have a group, and if I said, okay, form your own groups, certain people would naturally be worried that the groups would be formed and they wouldn't have any group to go into. If everyone else is really good friends with everyone else and you're all alone. A typical type of thing, that type of a fear. So when I'd say, okay, break into your own groups, one person say, do we have to do so much group work? We're doing group work so many times. But actually, he's just actually afraid that he's not going to get chosen. He's going to be left out of the group, something like that. He may not have very many friends, or English may not be his the easiest language for him to speak, or something like that. Another one, a typical one, when someone, you feel bad because someone doesn't like you and says that he thinks you're foolish or something. You've heard on the grapevine that this person thinks you're a fool. So what's the natural thing we do? Yeah, we immediately we say, boy, this guy, talking about fools in the world, number one fool. Look at the way he's standing there. Just look at that. Can you believe what a fool this guy is? But but what we're really saying is, boy, I wish you would not criticize me so much. You know, it really bothers me. But these are typical type of reactions, feelings that are encoded in peculiar ways, like that. Now, how to break the code of people's words to understand what they're feeling. This is called active listening, or listening with understanding, responding with understanding. And it's also a simple way to help people solve their own problems, or it's also useful in discussions, as we said yesterday. It's also useful as a first step in counseling, because it encourages people to talk, it helps them understand what they're thinking even more, and it, practically speaking, even if one is not so expert at it, it can't go wrong because of that reason that we mentioned right in the beginning. If you say, do you mean, it sounds like you're saying that that you have to go somewhere, the person says, no, I'm just hungry. So it almost can't go wrong, although If you're right a lot of the time, they'll have, people will trust your ability to understand them more. But let's
first, before we get into some of the practice of this, why don't we write down some emotions that are typical things that people feel. So on one side of the board, we'll write down positive emotions. And on the other side, we'll write down negative emotions. This will help. Okay, so there's actually some written down in the book. Without even looking at those, why don't we say, what are typical positive emotions or negative emotions? So just start calling them out. What's the happiness? Is that positive or negative?
I'll say it's positive.
Okay, happiness.
Unless it's happiness in the material world, and it's negative.
Okay, well, let's just talk about the persons. I asked for that one.
I have to admit it.
Okay, happiness, we'll call that positive. Everyone wants to be happy. Okay, another emotion?
Sadness.
So, except when it's about missing Krishna, separation from Krishna, that's another type of ecstasy. But we're just talking in simple terms here.
Peace.
Wow, that's definitely the rare commodity, especially if you're living in this building. We'll call it positive.
Frustration.
Yeah.
Confidence.
Do you have any self-confidence?
Enthusiasm.
Fear. Any others? Huh?
Anger.
Any others?
Tiredness.
What is that? Huh? What? Negative.
Except when you're trying to go to sleep, it's positive.
We're talking simply. Tired. But is tiredness? Yeah, it's a feeling. For sure. Okay.
Anxiety.
What was another one someone said?
Madness.
Meaning insanity? Huh? Who said that? Yeah, mad mean like madness, feeling of madness.
Okay.
Illusion.
But lust, greed.
I'm not sure if madness fits into a feeling.
I'm sure it means more than anger.
Combination.
Yeah, okay. Huh?
Patience.
I'm feeling patient.
Freedom.
Freedom. I'm feeling you're feeling free.
Free?
Free.
Okay.
You're free. Okay. Any others?
Joyful.
What?
Joyful,
okay. Full of joy.
No?
Yes. Joyful.
Satisfied.
Satisfied.
Sublime.
I'm feeling sublime, quite sublime today.
That's only for preserved for the British. Feeling sublime. What is it about? What are you feeling sublime about? What? Let's make it a simpler, more basic emotion.
I'm feeling really ecstatic.
Okay, we'll put it down. What is it again?
It's sublime. Sublime. Feeling quite sublime.
Okay.
And
all.
Yes.
And the us-ness, actually.
Anyone else ever feel any emotions?
Bitter.
Oh, yeah.
Bitter.
Feeling quite bitter, aren't you, Prabhu? Okay. What else?
Confused. Yes.
When you try to read this board, you're feeling a lot of confused, angry, sad, all these things.
confused. Other, where is the flip chart when we need it?
Table 10.
Huh? Table 10. We'll keep that on the satisfied, yeah?
Hopeful.
Expressive?
Feeling expressive. What do you feel like expressing? Some feeling?
Maybe that's stuff.
Sense control.
Sense control. What? Never heard of it. Self-control and self-confidence. I feel quite sense-controlled today.
Yeah.
It comes into the conversation.
Okay. Sense-controlled. Okay. Huh?
Sober.
Sober. Sober, that meant grave, too. The feeling grave today, yeah.
It's getting crowded up here.
Okay, well, why don't we just stop right now? Now, in listening with understanding, which also implies responding with understanding, remember what happens. The person expresses something to you. And you, he's encoded his feeling in that, right? And your job is to decode it, understand what he's feeling, and then respond to him in such a way that shows them that you've understood what he is saying. So, a response with understanding. Does anyone have any questions up to this point? A response with understanding basically has two parts. There is the feeling that you've decoded out of his statement and the reason why he's feeling like that. The reason, that's part one, the feeling that that you understand that he's feeling, and the second is the reason why he's feeling like that. Now he's theoretically told you this, so you're just repeating back to him what he's understood. Now, yesterday, for homework, we asked you to write down some problems. Okay. Could someone tell me something like on that level? Did you raise your hand? Or this? Yes.
Trying to memorize.
Oh, well, no. Why don't you put it in a sentence? Well, something that you want to tell me something.
Yes, I'll give you the problem.
No, don't tell me the problem yet, because that may be part of the answer. Or you can come to me. I have a problem. Yeah. Okay.
There's not enough time to memorize the material.
Okay. So there's not enough time in this class. You're talking about. This, for instance? Okay, in this class. So there's not enough time, he said to me, to memorize the material in this class. So what is the feeling that he's experiencing in that? So, could be frustration, it could be some anxiety, it could be apprehension, because it could be because there's a test coming up.
Anxiety.
Frustration. Because you'd like to memorize it and there's not enough time. Okay, so if I said to you, it sounds like you're frustrated because you don't have enough time to memorize the things that you'd like to memorize. Now, that's feeding back two parts. One is the feeling, and the second is the cause of the feeling. Right? Now, how did we do? Is it a real thing, experience that you're having?
Yes, with the anxiety as well.
Huh?
There's the anxiety.
The anxiety. Why? So you're in anxiety because you're not able to memorize these things? Enough in the question? Excuse me?
There's not sufficient time to memorize.
So you're in anxiety because there's not sufficient time to memorize them. So that's causing your anxiety that there's not sufficient time. Okay. Now,
in that simple act, to be understood by someone, although you didn't say it, you were in anxiety about someone, but for someone to actually have understood what your emotion is and actually feed that back to you, there is great solace and more. And the natural thing that happens, generally, the natural thing that happens, far different from what if someone said, don't worry about it, or you're so smart, you can do it in half the time, or Prabhu, you have to make the best use of the time that you have, or sleep less, you know, four different of, or anyway, the courses are almost over. I think that's all five of the different ineffectual ways to communicate and all five of the different roadblocks that we mentioned yesterday, giving advice. The communication never is completed. You've just bumped into his bubble, practically speaking. But when one responds with understanding, what naturally happens, or what the person naturally feels, is this person understands me, or at least understood what I said. And that in itself is a release and a relief for the person. In addition, what often happens is when the first communication has been shown to have worked and he has actually understood, the person naturally talks more. Did you feel any tendency to want to talk more about that subject? You know, you didn't, though, but...
Just to explain that.
Yeah, you felt that. Just by saying that. And there we were in the middle of a classroom situation where, you know, 30 some odd people are watching you and listening. You're in like a test tube and everyone is watching. And it's, you know exactly what we're doing, and we've picked out a few different feelings that it may be, and we've chosen one, and it's anxiety. I mean, just by saying you're anxiety because there's not enough time to study, naturally one, even in this type of an artificial situation, the tendency was to speak more. Now, when I taught this in the first class that I taught it a few years ago in a teacher training course, we were doing it as a more extended session on, this was one of the opening lessons on counseling. And I remember sitting here with Guru Kesh, right about in this spot, sitting, you know, in my typical yoga asana's way or this or that. And he was practicing it on me. And just naturally, I had to think of a problem, something that was bothering me. And then, because it was the exercise, and he started doing this to me, and he was quite expert at it, and I started opening up all these things. And it actually very quickly got to something very deep that I wasn't really thinking, but it was hinted at by what I was saying. It was very, very, very interesting. Just by following this simple technique. Why don't we try another one? Thank you. Anyone like to? Yeah.
Well, I'd be so happy if I could live in India.
Sounds like you'd be so happy if you could live in India. Well, you have the emotion in there. You'd really like to move to India, wouldn't you?
Okay.
You prefer living, it sounds like you, where are you living now?
LA.
Sounds like you prefer to live in India than South America. So that's very simple, right? Did I get it right? I mean, in the basic level that you were...
Yeah, in the basic level, yeah. The problem is behind.
Yeah, but this is...
The problem is...
It could be, but I'm not going to just psychoanalyze you and try to infer very deeply from that, but I'm feeding back to you the feeling of what I heard, that you'd rather live in India than in South America even, and it's pointed, because all you said is I'm happy here, and it's pointing to something deeper. Now, good. So, and continue talking. it would be very simple if you really wanted to, if you really want to talk, if you have something to say, with that type of a first understanding, then naturally you would probably say something else if it's a real conversation, or if I'd say, care to tell me why? Then it would, I've just understood what you said the first time, so naturally. Okay, anyone else like to try one?
Just a question on that.
Yeah.
Could you have replied, would you be more satisfied living in India?
Would you be?
Would that sort of question be too delving, too early?
Well, what you really want to do is just feedback what you've heard, not necessarily pull out more, not necessarily at this point. Because maybe that's even enough.
Yeah, but then the students generally don't come with the problem by us. You have to sort of analyze where the problem is. When you feed that back to me, okay, if you're satisfied, but that doesn't hurt me because
no,
I don't know the problem.
But that's my experience is that that's not really the case. Because you've told that to me because you have something, you're in disequilibrium. There's something you want to express to me. So what it means is that your first message has been understood. So therefore, naturally, the person you're speaking to will naturally gain a little credibility as someone who will understand what you have to say. And therefore, naturally, the tendency, because you want to tell someone, is to try a second round, just naturally.
So basically, by this initial response, you just want to feel a feeling of confidence in the person that, yes, this is a person that can understand. And I can actually reveal myself a little bit more because I think he can actually help me. So you just want to just open the channel of communication with anything else, right?
That's only part of it. But what's not coming out here because of the artificialness of the situation is that naturally people do respond again. Because naturally, if someone has heard you and they're waiting for you to talk again, you naturally do, and you go a little bit further this time. That's not coming out yet. Now here's an example from this book. It's kid stuff. Here's some examples of of how this kind of thing works ideally. Now, I've never had experience where it works so ideally according to the book. But here's an example, and I think you'll get some idea of how it works. Because this, in and of itself, can help people solve their own problem. So there's a student going to approach a teacher. Excuse me, the principal of the school. He says, I thought I wanted to tell you about Mr. Larson, who's the teacher. So the principal responds, because he's been trained in his responding with understanding. Sounds like you're not too sure now, like you're changing your mind about talking to me. Well, if he ever found out I talked to you, he'd really be mad. I see, you're worried about what Mr. Larson would do if I told him about this conference. Yeah, I won't tell anyone what you've talked about here unless you say it's okay. That's a relief, because I'm already in enough trouble with him. You know what he did? Look at this shirt. And he points to a front of his shirt where a button is missing and a triangular tear shows around the buttonhole. He grabbed me and ripped it. Boy, wait till my mom sees that. Oh, I'm going to be in trouble. You're afraid that she'll be really angry at you. Just responding like that. Yeah, she's always yelling at me about tearing up my clothes or getting all dirty. She'll never believe that Mr. Larson tore it. She'll say, well, why would a teacher do that? And I'll have to tell her about the fight with Steve. And then she'll say, that's all you ever do anymore, just fight and argue. I'll never hear the end of it over and over, just fight and argue, fight and argue. Principal, you're pretty sick of hearing that, aren't you? Yeah, it wasn't so bad until Alex. Yeah, it wasn't so bad until Alex got back from Vietnam. Do you know Alex? He used to go here to this school, but I guess that was before you came. Well, anyway, he came back and moved into my room, and he took all my stuff and crammed it into a box in the corner of the closet. And you know, he took over. He really thinks he's the boss. Like, he orders me and my sister around and all the time, and Mom won't do anything about it. She says, someone has to straighten you two out, and your father's not here to do it. It's not my fault that Dad left. You feel things have really changed for the worse since Alex came back. You've lost your privacy and you get bossed around more. Right. It's not the room so much. Alex has got has to have some place to stay while he's looking for a job or until he goes back to school or whatever he does. But it's sure not like it used to be. It's different since Alex came back. No, I mean when Dad was there and Alex was okay, I think Alex is on something. Drugs, you mean? Yes, something. Sometimes he's really doing okay, you know, like he used to be, but sometimes he's sort of wild and he goes out and he'll be gone for a long time. When he comes back, he's all goofy, you know, kind of out of it. Principal, you have some evidence that makes you suspicious. Yeah, like the money I've been saving to buy a new... swimming suit. It's gone. You think Alex may have taken it to buy drugs. I don't really care about the money. My old suit is okay. You're more worried about Alex. What'll I do? So it goes on like this. And then finally it comes to a solution. And then the kid figures it out all by himself what he's going to have to do. So, not that things just work out so smoothly like that, but if someone is actually expert in understanding and hearing what another person is saying and understanding it deeply, it naturally gives the person the confidence and to move on. Because after all, he's the one that he's in disequilibrium and he has something he really wants to say. So naturally, when the blockage is removed of a person who's not a good listener, it starts coming out.
So by feeding the person back the right emotions and the right feelings, you encourage them to express more uncomfortable.
Right. And you feed back the feeling that you understand, and also what you understand is the cause of the feeling. You can analyze all those responses by the principle in that way. The feeling and the cause of the feeling. Or you're in anxiety because Alex seems to be taking some drugs. Something like that. You're worried. It's not so much the money you're worried about, but you're worried about Alex. So worried, and because Alex is, etc. Now, this seems easier than it is to actually listen so carefully to people. Because usually we listen with just part of our mind. We just listen with part of our mind. It's hard to listen carefully and pick out exactly what's right. The right feeling with the right cause. But, even if you're not exactly right, the person, if you feed back with your understanding, then he will usually tell you what the right answer is. Any questions? More comments?
Even though there's so many techniques involved, a lot of it seems to have to go through practice. You have to go through the experience of listening and responding properly and seeing the reaction of your responses, and then the person will be positive and continue to express himself. But in the average situation, I mean, how often does that come up if you get so much practice?
But I find that if you try to listen to people and respond in this, I would say, understanding way, then it happens many, many, many times every day, if you have to do it. Because people talk to us, and they're just bumping into our bubble. And how many, do you have this experience? You say something to someone, you try to tell him something, and he responds with what he's doing. Often we have, you know, exchange letters with people like that. You know, you're telling him everything you're doing, and then he writes back everything he's doing, but he doesn't at all comment on anything that you said in your letter. This is stuff that goes on all day long. Not only
goes on all day long. If we start listening to people, it's amazing. People start, when you start listening to people and showing them that you're listening to them, they start opening up to you. They start telling you what they're thinking.
Isn't like the thought that maybe if I get into it too much with somebody, then I might have to try to solve it from, I mean, like you were saying earlier.
Whose problem is it?
Yeah, it seems
like... Well, that's why we talked about problem ownership.
Yeah, but without that really being firmly fixed, then when you really open up to this person, let them up, open up to you...
Because you hear someone... You're not opening up to the person.
So
what you're doing is listening to them and responding to tell them that you're understanding what they're saying. And you haven't signed a contract to them that you have agreed by understanding someone. You're not immediately accepting that you have to. It's your responsibility to solve their problem. And you don't take that. In that sense, you are entering into it. This is communication. You're actually having a complete communication with them. They're speaking to a human being, and a human being has understood them, what they're saying. That's what's going on. You may be empathetic, you may not be empathetic, you may be feeling deeply the misery that they are feeling, you may not be, but you're understanding what they're saying, at least on some level.
I want to give some of the pastimes of Prabhupada. We have a read about conversations in the little groups, how he understood where they were coming from, even though they said different things.
It takes perception, and it takes experience, and it takes some practice in dealing with people. But it's such a worthwhile thing. We put it in the art of teaching because part of teaching is listening to people, not only telling people. Whether you're leading a discussion, or you're trying to get response from the students, how class is doing, part of teaching is listening. Because you want to get as much time, even in teaching, into the no problem area when students are having so many problems. The teaching is learning is minimized.
This teaching is every student has the attitude to get to the anxiety. Anxiety. Maybe this not is actually trying to help that person. Because that is anxiety.
Usually,
you, the listener, are actually trying to help the audience and the students to get over their anxiety.
Yeah. The basic attitude should be one of concern. We mentioned this on the first day. There should definitely, for a teacher to be a teacher, he should be concerned about his students. And it's very difficult to separate, even if you're just teaching them ABC, it's hard to separate, if one is a real teacher, the concern for the individual from the concern that he just simply learned ABC, especially in Krishna consciousness. And especially we're also talking about not only teaching per se, but we're talking about husbands dealing with wives. We're talking about spiritual masters dealing with their disciples, temple presidents dealing with the devotees in the temple, congregational members dealing with the temple devotees. This type of a thing is just generally very helpful if one masters it, or even attempts it practically. Maharaj,
it seems in this last one, that in your example, students here is very technical, so if one can get some technical mastery and actually have some success just by that, just by learning to listen and turn the words around a little bit. But obviously there's more to it than that, which has been a curious thing. For example, if you're just being very technical and you hear something and you just kind of turn it around back on them, and it would require much depth of understanding. It's kind of a mechanical operation. I was just curious about
that. I'm not sure what the question is, but it's more comment.
And I presume there's more to it than that. But
that meaning?
Than is the mechanical.
Well, I don't. I mean, even when Daihatsu was speaking, and I wasn't feeling it was mechanical from my side. I was trying to understand what he was saying, and at first I said that you'd be happy to move to India. I repeated that back. It didn't go in very deeply into me, and then I had a deep understanding that he'd rather be in India than where he is in South America. He'd be living in India and South America. From my side, that wasn't mechanical. I was trying to understand what he was saying. So that must be there on the part of the teacher or one who's hearing. There has to be the desire to understand what the person is saying. And it takes a lot. That attitude takes a lot.
So in the application of the art of teaching, this generally it moves it into a counseling situation where an individual is individually counseled with the idea that he can solve his own problems, counseling being the type of advisor. And you were talking yesterday about the difference between the person who has to get things done and the counselor.
The person who has to
get things done and the counselor. Then the question comes up, how far can the teacher who has to get a certain amount of subject matter through to a certain number of students move aside into the area of counseling and spend being a certain number of students out into the no problem area?
I think that counseling generally is not done in class time, that's one thing. And if you're talking about a formal class situation, in my mind, When I thought of putting this subject matter in, I thought that because we're devotees, even if one devotee is a teacher, another devotee is a student in a particular class even, there are so many times that we see each other every day, or if not every day, every year, at different times, when it would really help if we learn how to listen properly. That's what I was thinking, even more than just a formal class situation. As far as in the Gurukula, the teachers are seeing the students all day long, practically speaking, too. I would think that in a situation like some of the material that we covered on lecturing and things, it was useful. No, I was thinking that was useful for, say, if a school comes to your temple and you have to give a presentation, that would be very useful. But this is useful for dealing with anyone, practically speaking. All day long with talking to people, but generally speaking, at least I'd say for myself, I'm talking and not listening. And I'm not listening to what people are saying, I'm listening to what's going on in my bubble all day long. And it's very frustrating for the people that are trying to tell me something. I'm probably not the only one who has this experience.
So as people feel comfortable talking, they begin to naturally solve those problems of their own.
And also, this is a good road, if you're in the position of counselor, this is a very good road into counseling. First, listening to the people, and then naturally the next step is coming up with some questions.
Understand them, and they naturally feel indebted.
much easier to.
The other side is how difficult it is to work with someone who you feel that doesn't understand you, doesn't care what you're thinking. That's the negative side. On the other side, it's very one is very encouraged to work with someone who cares enough about them to listen sometimes.
I have a question. How do you listen to a younger person, or perhaps, for example, I'm teaching a maths class, and the boys often talk to me about things not related to mathematics. They want to express certain things they have. One boy asked me why the gurus are falling down. And another boy asked
me... Okay, why don't you start with that one?
Yeah.
So why don't we try it?
Listen. How do you?
Well, why don't you try it? You will role play that one.
I'll be the. Babuji, why are all these sannyasis getting married?
It upsets you that sannyasis have left their position, doesn't it?
Why is this, Babuji?
Okay, so it didn't continue anymore with you expressing anything.
And that's what I also when they all just continue on that same line, I don't know.
Well, then someone, you know, a specific request for information. And then you might, you know, so you can explain that it's not that all. This isn't happening all. And there's so many things to explain about it, and then you can say what you think about that. And then you continue from there. Again, there's no, it's more than just technique. If someone requests for you from information, what time is it? Sounds like you know what, like you know what time it is. No, they want to know what time it is too. More, there's some common sense in these things, but...
Well, like that's also an incident of a good question is a sincere
question at an appropriate time, so how do you divert the person, and, so, you know, he's saying he's going to math class, and he's asking about who's involved, and you don't want to stop teaching the time. Sure. So naturally, one says that's, you don't want to discourage the questioning, right? But you're saying the time. So that's an interesting question. I think, why don't we talk about that? But now we have to have our math class, so when would be a good time for you to talk about it? You want to come right after class, or we'll talk about it right after class? Because you have to be careful not to squash the inquisitive spirit.
You were saying that generally the counseling function of a teacher doesn't take place during the course of the class.
I would think, especially in a lecture.
But outside of class, generally. But can't some of the groundwork or some of the functions of counseling be performed during the course of the class just by the way it's presented or just by the teacher being conscious of how the mindset of the students at the time?
I agree with you that you can get some basic relationship going with the students in an academic class time. I think that's what you meant, that's part of the relationship too. It's either establishing you as a trustworthy or an untrustworthy person, right? Just by how you're teaching and how you're dealing with the students.
It seems to me this level of communication is happening between a teacher and a surrendered student. How will you deal with the situation that is one of these students that is not surrendered, that is a troublemaker, and it's a problem? How will you?
You just the point is that he's listening to it. It's not for the surrendered students. It's to, and it's not only between the teacher and the student. It's amongst friends and friends. So equals. It's just listening to someone and letting them know that you understood what he said. Instead of theoretically going up on this too much, why don't we break it into groups of two right now, and let's get some practice. So since just everyone sort of turn to the person nearest you and start telling them your problems, but wait, one do it at a time. Now, we've put this on the board over here. Just so in case you have a little trouble picking out an emotion. And then we'll leave a few minutes at the end, although we don't even have much time, to just talk about how the experience went and whether the people did feel like talking more or they were disappointed or what. Okay, so why don't we just try it? And if there's an extra person, we could do it with threes, with one person being the counselor, one the speaker, and one the witness. Thank you. Okay, that's a little response on how it went, and how you felt it went.
This is very nice. Realization actually when you question someone, when someone expresses something to you,
yeah,
and you try to figure out what is actually going on within him in an indirect way, and he reveals it up to you.
Did that naturally happen?
Yeah.
Who found that happened, that when if the person responded and understood what they were saying, that naturally they wanted to open up and speak more? If you had that experience, raise your hand in that simple thing. It's just very, very, very natural and very simple. And my opinion is just the conversations go on all day long. Well, one person is, what, there's the word in communications for that? One-way conversation, you know, they had it?
Symmetric.
That's when both person is listening, both people are listening to each other. But it's, my opinion is it's very rare. It's very rare. So tomorrow, the only homework is come with, you can only be asked to talk to each other and practice this. So come with lots of problems and things and people you want to complain about, everything. And by definition, you'll have sympathetic ears. Okay, now there are two other little things. You can pick up the test papers. I have everyone's graded on the third test except for the one that Mahahari Prabhu gave me yesterday. The one that he gave me. I have all the others adjusted and everything. Here's the curve on it, the relationship between the score that you got on this side and the report card grade for this particular test. So you can pick up your papers after one moment. One of